Good afternoon, everyone. Very warm welcome to you all. My name is Anuj Sonpal, CEO of Valorem Advisors. We represent the investor relations of Satin Creditcare Network Limited. On behalf of the company, let me thank you all for joining us today for the Analyst Day 2025. Purpose of today's session is to provide you with deeper insights into the company's business, financial performance, strategy, as well as give you an opportunity to interact with the leadership team of the company. Before we begin, let me mention a short cautionary statement. Some of the statements made in today's discussions may be forward-looking in nature. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties which could cause actual results to differ materially from those anticipated. These statements are based on management's beliefs, assumptions, and information currently available to them. We caution the audience not to place any undue reliance on such forward-looking statements in making any investment decisions. Now, let me introduce you to the distinguished members of the management today joining us today. Firstly, we have with us Dr. H.P. Singh, Chairman and Managing Director. Dr. Singh is a visionary entrepreneur who transformed a grassroots insight into one of India's leading microfinance institutions. A chartered accountant and law graduate, Dr. Singh founded SENL in 1990 to bridge the credit gap for underserved communities through innovative financial solutions. Under his leadership, the company has grown to an AUM of over 12,000 crores, empowering more than 3 million women across 29 states and union territories. With over four decades of experience in financial services, Dr. Singh has steered SENL through multiple economic cycles with resilience and foresight. His contributions to financial inclusion have earned him several accolades, including Social Innovator, Exemplary Leader, CEO of the Year, and Pillar of the BFSI industry. Conferred with an honorary doctorate in microfinance, Dr. Singh continues to inspire through his purpose-driven leadership and commitment to the inclusive growth across India. Next, we have with us Mr. Jugal Kataria, Group Controller. He's a seasoned finance professional with over 34 years of experience across diverse industries. A graduate of Shriram College of Commerce, he is a cost accountant and a rank holder chartered accountant and a company secretary. Mr. Kataria joined SENL in 2000 as Chief Financial Officer and was elevated to Group Controller in 2019. Prior to SENL, he has worked with Apollo Tyres and Berger Paints Limited. Known for his deep financial acumen and strategic leadership, he has played a pivotal role in shaping SENL's financial strength and growth trajectory. Next, we have with us Ms. Aditi Singh, who is the Chief Strategy Officer. Aditi is a seasoned professional with over two decades of experience in the financial services industry, brings extensive expertise across investment banking, private equity, fundraising, and mergers and acquisitions. At Satin Creditcare, she leads critical functions including strategy, investor and public relations, collections, ESG, CSR, and social performance management, while also driving global debt partnerships with DFIs and impact lenders. Prior to joining Satin, she held key roles at CG Corp Global, UV Capital Private Limited, and IFCI Ventures Capital Funds, gaining rich experience across international markets. A gold medalist in economics from Banasthali Vidyapith. She also holds a postgraduate degree in management of business finance from the Indian Institute of Finance in Delhi. We next have with us Mr. Anil Quatra, Chief Business Officer. Mr. Anil is an accomplished finance services professional with over 17 years of experience in sales and operations. He has been instrumental in driving the organization's growth through his sharp business acumen, process re-engineering expertise, and focus on technology innovation. Known for his collaborative leadership and ability to align strategic goals with operational excellence, he continues to strengthen Satin's business performance and customer outreach. Mr. Quatra has previously held key positions at Bharat Financial Inclusion Limited, Max Life Insurance, India Bulls Financial Services, and ICICI Prudential Life Insurance, gaining deep insights into the financial services ecosystem. Mr. Sunil Yadav, next. He's the head of information technology at Satin. He holds a master's degree in computer science and a certification in artificial intelligence from IIT Roorkee. With over 15 years of experience in the banking and finance industry, he brings deep expertise in enterprise solution architecture, IT security, and technology leadership. Joining Saturn in 2016 as a solution architect, Mr. Yadav has been instrumental in leading the company's digital transformation journey, building a strong in-house technology team, and delivering innovative solutions aligned with Saturn's vision. Prior to joining Saturn, he worked with Mvantage Payments, now part of Amazon Payments, Signet Payments, acquired by IRCTC, and ACI Worldwide, where he played key roles in developing technology solutions for the banking, payments, and fintech ecosystem. Along with them, we also have other management. I will not go into too much details with their biodata, but we have with us Mr. Manoj Agarwal, CFO of Saturn Credit Care Network Limited, Mr. Dheeraj Jha, Director and CEO at Saturn FinServ, Mr. Amit Sharma, MD and CEO of Saturn Housing Finance, Mr. Rupinder Kalia, MD and CEO of Saturn Technologies, Mr. Anil Gupta, Business Head Products at Saturn Credit Care Network Limited, Mr. Pramod Marar, CEO of Saturn FinServ, Mr. Varun Shakardas, Head Products and Strategy at Saturn FinServ, and Ms. Pratyaksha Naithani, Lead Investor Relations. Now, without any further delay, let us start with the presentation. We will first start with a short video on the company, followed by Mrs. Aditi Singh, CSO, who will take you through the presentation. Thank you.
Women, as homemakers, are often invisible. Their efforts go unnoticed. Their labor, unrecognized. And their contributions, undervalued. Despite being the backbone of their households, they remain unseen. But the moment a woman starts earning, she becomes visible to her family and to society. Financial independence does more than income generation. It transforms her identity, granting her recognition, decision-making power, and the ability to shape her own future. This is where change is needed, and this is what Saturn recognizes.
Namaskar, mor naam Sri Hokuntala Nath, moi dukhon hale di soli asu palto di asu eta settings or pura loan loi pele moi eta hal dukhon solai asu mor accounts nasile moi settings or pura loan loi pele accounts khulilu hal dukhon solalu eta kapur dukhon bikri kori pele moi accountot paisa alob jama koribo parisu settings e okole diya nai aru আমার গাঁওর সব শিপিনীকে লোন দি দিছে আর এই লোনের টকারে আমি গোটেই শিপিনীয়ে গাঁওর ধর আমার যিকেইজনে লৈছো গোটেইকেইজনে ইনকাম করে পেলে চলি আছে আর এই টকাখিনিয়ে গোটেইবিল শিপিনীয়ে ব্যাংকত জমা করবলৈ পাইছে আর সেটিংসর ঋতুক আমি অশেষ ধন্যবাদ জানাইছো আর যাতে আমি অলপমান আগবাড়ি যাব পারো অকল মই নহয় আমার গাঁর যিবর শিপিনী আছে গোটেকিটা ধর সেটিংসর পরা লোন লই পেলে আগবাড়ি যাব পারিছে আর আশা করছো যাতে এই ইয়াতকে আর অলপমান বেশি করে পেলে আমাক গোটেবর শিপিনীকে সহায় করে দিই তার বাবে মই সেটিংসত আমার তরফের পরা ধন্যবাদ জানাইছি
I now request Mrs. Aditi Singh to please start with the presentation.
Kya on ho gaya A very good afternoon to everyone, and thank you for taking out time and coming for our Analyst Day. Can I request for the presentation to start showing here? Can we start the presentation, please? Okay. So, of course, you saw who all have shown up to today's event. So, I'll directly take you to a... Yeah, sure. So I will directly take you to a very brief background. Why are we here? I mean, we are here to meet you, but why is Saturn here in the market, or companies like Saturn in the market? Because that's how we were. The sector that we have started addressing had no formal credit, had a lot of informal lending. We've all seen Bollywood movies and how the women were exploited by the money lenders. There was no bank presence. So one branch per 17 villages is how we were. Then the women and the rural households did not have enough collaterals to offer. There was very high cost. And when I say high cost, not just the cost of the interest that women had to bear or people had to bear, also the cost of operations for people. And a gender exclusion. And gender exclusion is real, except for microfinance. I mean, I had problem when I availed a home loan, so you can imagine the perils of a woman in rural India. If it not for companies like Saturn, where would they have been? So this is where the sector has, without spending too much time of what it was and how exploitative or unfair it was. So where we are today, our industry size today is 3.75 lakh crores of markets, more than 7 crore borrowers who we are serving, 80% rural borrowers. Institutional, the portfolio quality is, despite today's choppy waters, you are all informed investors, informed analysts, you know how the market is, still the portfolio quality par 90 is around 5%. There has been a degrowth in the last market, we all know about it, so we will not discuss, but yeah, women share, which is almost 97%, loan ticket size around 50,000 rupees, digital penetration, and you all had spent some time in the experience zone, so you know what digital penetration or how we are talking technology here, and the employment. So when we say the employment, one is, of course, we empower the people who borrow from us, but it's also the people who we hire. This is a boy who's 17, 18, 19 years of age, a 10th or 12th pass, semi-skilled, unskilled, having no skills. And we give them a job security, we give them accommodation, boarding, lodging, and a career graph. A career growth where they actually grow. And so of course, while we are reading about the sector headwinds, let me show you the tailwinds. How we feel the worst is over, and even yesterday Business Standard had this conference, is the worst over? Today there's an article, is the worst over? So that's how the worst is over. There are very strong macro tailwinds which show, one of course on the macro side, when the India's GDP is growing and we are reading India growth story, then is how the rural credit penetration, the sector where we operate, how that is working. How the portfolio quality for us has shown improvement. So from 8.3% now it has stabilized to around 6%. And showing further signs of recovery. Also, the disbursements have started showing a positive trend. Regulator is supportive. Our SROs have come with guardrails 2.0 also until recently, which all is going to our favor because it's bringing a lot of credit discipline. Then, of course, the funding revival. Because so far, the double whammy was, while there was a problem, there was also a funding winter for many. And I'm not talking about Saturn here, I'm talking about the sector. There was a funding winter, which now we are seeing again green shoots where there are talks about a corporate guarantee fund of 20,000 odd crore and many other such measures. And of course, the market growth potential, the market remains and market is here to stay. And so is the sector called microfinance. Then of course, consolidation, efficiency gains, these are natural, I will say, growth drivers for any sector in general and for us in particular. So yes, stabilization is here and the sector is here to stay and thrive. Now coming to numbers about us and what we do. Of course, we bridge the capital gap, we serve the underserved, and there is a repayment model which is tailored to the cash flows of our borrowers who are majorly daily wagers or doing businesses which are cash intensive and very regular, I will say, incomes they will earn. So you tailor it to suit them. And of course, we do the real financial inclusion. We don't just talk about it. We walk the talk. Social empowerment. And you saw in the video, money is the biggest, I will say, enabler or gives the most empowerment. So yes, that's what we really do through our work. So it is indeed a purpose-driven vision which we have. I will talk about who is driving Satin. Who are those people? So it's a highly accomplished board of directors. Of course, our chairman and managing director is Dr. Singh, who has started and nourished this company. You have heard about him. Then Mr. Satvinder Singh is also a non-independent director. Other than these, there are five independent, very highly accomplished directors who are there. So actually, ours is a company which is a board, and that to an independent board-driven company. Whether it is Ms. Jyoti Vij, who is the Director General of FICCI, to Mr. J.D. Gupta, who was a partner at Deloitte and also on the board of Deloitte APAC. Mr. Kalra, who is a career banker, very senior banker. Mr. A.K. Sharma, who is the ED of LIC and also the CEO for LIC HFL AMC. Mr. Anupam, who is a very senior seasoned chartered accountant. Now talking about how we have, so of course, we are a 35-year-old company. We just had our birthday on 16th of October. So how we have weathered various crises, and we were promoters, have a significant skin in the game. So of course, we'd never had the luxury of a 1,000 crore check coming our way. So we knew we have to make do with whatever we have. Demon came, and Demon was very interesting. Interesting now, not then. That at the time it was very painful, because more than 50% of our portfolio was delinquent at that time. With a net worth of 683 crore, our delinquencies were almost 1,300 crores. We weathered that. We introduced technology. We started diversifying into secured products. We added more capital. So those were the days where NBFCs operated at 15% or so, and we weren't any different. But we realized that now it has to be a different game going forward, and we changed it. Then came COVID. They say the mother of all crises, and rightly so. So during COVID, we again evolved. We did not wait. Technology, underwriting, fundraising, subsidiaries, of course, started taking shape. We were the first one to form a collection team, which last year people started talking about. And we already have a collection team which is seasoned and battle-hardened, also fertile ground for poaching. So having said that, during COVID, our credit cost was the least in the industry. You're all, again, informed analysts, informed investors. Industry lost around 17% of their portfolio. Satin's loss was 10.7%, and it has covered by not one but many analysts. And talking about the recent industry crisis is why we were asking, is the worst over? We have actually managed the crisis so well that we are profitable, we are growing. The sector regrew by 20-odd percent last year. We grew by 7%. Even if we see the first half figure, so the 1.5 year, which is the crisis period, industry has degrown by 96,000 crores. So currently it is 3.39 lakh crore. It was 4,33,000 crore 1.5 years back. That means March. We have grown in the first half by 8%. And so we have grown actually 15%, 7 plus 8. So that's the huge gap. 22 negative to 15 positive is how we are distinguished. And of course, you can see the graphs which look lovely. I will not bore you with the details, but I'm sharing you how we have really, really differentiated ourselves as a very solid institution. Our growth is not sporadic, it is not accidental, and it is not given on a platter for sure. And this is where it brings us. Number 3 in terms of AUM, Number three, in terms of customer base, the most diversified company, 31, 26 states and 5 UTs, over 100,000 villages, and consistently among the top 10 NBFCs. And this time, funnily enough, it's like we were barely growing, but others degrew so much that the gap has only widened. This is just showing the vastness of our operations and how diversified geographical presence that we have. I talked most of the numbers recently and we declared our results day before, so I'm sure you may have seen it. Otherwise, the numbers are here for your consumption. ESG. Good to hear. Every fund has the theme, but who's really doing it? At a time when a large, I will say, consumer brand had their CEO take a private jet from Seattle every day, to who's really doing it. So that's how we are doing ESG. We are paperless. We have a green building. We are committed to United Nations carbon credit program. We are doing everything, you name it, in terms of bringing that positive change by green drives. And I'm talking about actual impact. We are the ones who do GHG accounting, all scope 1, 2, 3. And if you see our scores, it's only going better. We are setting up the baseline here, and there's more news for you to, I would say, keep following us. Coming to S. Here, I believe all of you are convinced that we are doing a good job on the social front, but I will still repeat it. Not through only through our operation, but even through the activities we do on ground, whether it's financial literacy workshop, the health camps, how are we doing for, we are supporting a university in Punjab which has more than 50% women in STEM through our CSR efforts. So how we are continuing to impact lives. And the most glorified and abused word, governance. So how we are governed, I told you about the board. I don't have to repeat. Full-scale transparency. So we take pride by saying what we are reporting, you can have it checked and you will find it confirmed. Tech-driven governance. So much so that whenever anybody from the regulators come to our office, for instance, if they come for 5 days, they are convinced in a day and a half, because we do not give them any report. We just give them login into our system. Boss, we are moving out. You are here. You are actually in our system. See what you have to and ask if you have any questions. Of course, there wouldn't be any questions if they have everybody with them. We are listed for almost 30 years now. We got listed as early as 1996. Most of you wouldn't know it. We got listed on the regional stock exchanges. No negative remark, no penalty, no adverse, anything, all these years. So I would say in terms of governance, no news is good news. There has been no news for 30 years and counting, I would say. If how? I mean, one can say anything, and it is common to say that about promoter-driven companies, that there has to be something, but these numbers can't lie to you. This data cannot lie to you. And we have had adverse action as early as like last year. October was the time I remember, when there were adverse action on many NBFCs. And so that also speaks well when I say that we have had nothing to worry us, nothing that made us lose sleep. So that's how sure we are about what we do. And of course, our audit, our three lines of defense, I can go on talking about them, but you would say everyone says that. We also showed you how we do things differently, how transparent we are, how effective we are through our experience center, so be it. Coming to microfinance. So this is just a brief about what we do. So in how many states we are, the average ticket size, and the kind of products we do. And currently, the standalone numbers in microfinance are 11,044 crores. And yes, the revenue we had was 1,358 odd crores is what we have done in the first half. I will take 2 minutes of yours because you have just seen the video. It is still fresh in your memory. What we have achieved by doing what all we have. So whenever we budget what we are going to do in the coming year. We do take into account macro factors and the other scenarios which are playing. Then That makes us resilient to the external shocks. Because we had a robust KYC, we did not have frauds. Because we have a good onboarding, we had more rejections, and our rejections have been the highest, 64%, 67%. We had less credit cost. So we lost business perhaps, we did not grow by 50% when everyone was growing at 50%, but it was a good business to lose. So this is what we do, onboarding. And I will say, and I will quote my boss here, actually our business is not the business of disbursement anymore, it is the business of collections. So whatever we do, you have to do before onboarding the customer. Once the customer comes in your fold, it's only post-mortem, which is never very happy, never very pleasant. And for an unsecured book, even more so. So digitized onboarding, OTC, OTP-based verifications, detailed household income assessment, which is very tricky for our segment, for the informal segment. So you have to have that vision. If she has one cow, she's selling this much milk, this must be the rate, this is what her income must be. So this is how we are achieving it through our tech and processes, which gives us a good portfolio quality. Then the disbursement, again, how well you do it to your bank, to their bank account. So we as a company, we do not do KYC. We just scan the iris of our borrower and go into her data. We are implementing things like facial recognition. Like we all saw Digi Yatra and we were floored by this, but we are doing it in the sector unheard of. And again, UIDAI registered, AUA, KUA licensed company, the first one in the sector. Others are learning from us how we did that. Credit discipline, review, early warning signals, you name it. And that, of course, gives us better risk mitigation and better quality. Collection and delinquency management, because it all boils down there. What is the collection efficiency? Which will be the income? Which will be saving you the credit cost? So there again, we have the forecast, the scorecard, the centralized team which keeps a look at it and which shows the improvement in the overall business and collections. So thank you. This was all about me and Anuj will take over from here.
Our story is about people, purpose and progress. From humble beginnings with paper ledgers, handwritten documents to powerful cloud systems, we've always believed in empowering dreams through innovation. As we grew across India, technology became essential, not optional. That's why in 2016, Satin began its digital journey, transforming every process, every connection, and every dream we serve. Our process begins in the heart of rural India, with a digital village survey and selection. Each customer's location is mapped with precision, ensuring no household is left behind. The journey continues with the open general meeting, where trust, transparency and community engagement lay the foundation for every group. For interested members, KYC is completed instantly through eKYC using Iris, an industry first by Satin, or facial recognition. For faster onboarding, OTP-based OKYC is also available. Every client is geotagged with her live photo in front of her home, and all information is securely masked. Alongside KYC, an automatic credit bureau check begins in the background. Our system verifies profiles using name, date of birth, address, credit score, and internal guardrails, ensuring responsible lending. Once cleared, the loan receives instant digital approval. Next comes bank account validation through penny drop verification, confirming details before disbursement. The shared service team reviews every client's details and supporting documents before final approval. Before disbursement, members undergo compulsory group training, understanding financial discipline and repayment methods. Then comes the group recognition test, complete with geotagged house verification, ensuring accuracy and authenticity at every step. Once approved, both client and co-insurer complete e-signing via Iris, making the process fully paperless. Immediately after, they receive the key fact statement. Simple, transparent, and secure. Funds are then disbursed directly into the customer's bank account through NEFT, maintaining 100% cashless operations since 2019. Repayments are just as seamless. Managed digitally through tabs, QR codes, UPI, BBPS, or intent SMS. And when cash handling is required, trusted partners like Airtel Payments Bank, Fino, Bank of Baroda, FingPay, and PayNearby manage it safely, reducing risk and saving time. From village surveys to cashless disbursements, Satin's digital ecosystem is redefining efficiency, trust, and empowerment. One village at a time.
Thank you. Now I'll request our group controller, Mr. Jugalji, to come and discuss the financial performance.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Aditya has given you a good overview of how the sector has evolved over a period of time, where we stand. Before I present you some of the numbers, trend, how we have performed in the last 4.5 years or so, over a long period of time, rather than focusing on what we are doing quarter to quarter. There are enough negativity in the sector. Means if you see, starting from COVID in 2000 to local elections, state regulations, floods, heat wave, so on and so forth, the newspapers are filled with all the negative news about microfinance. But in the last 6.5 years, though we have seen the most challenging time, we have seen a lot of positive things. Every time there is a challenge, the industry has come out much more evolved, much more strengthened. From April 2022, the new regulations came in. RBI has supported the sector with unified regulations for all the regulated entities. Earlier, there were regulations only for NBFC MFIs. Now it is there for all the entities, banks, small finance bank, and everybody. The new regulation has given a lot of flexibility to charge the rate of interest, risk-based pricing, etc. The scope of microfinance has been increased to cover household up to 3 lakh rupees household income, so on and so forth. So a lot of positive things have happened from the regulator side also. There's a lot of transparency which has happened, the KFS statements, etc. So things have evolved over a period of time. RBI has given a lot of to SROR, industry associations. So over and above the well-defined regulations from RBI, even MFIN has given very clearly defined guardrails which have implemented over a period of time. So today we are working in a very, very controlled environment, and not so whatever has happened in the recent 1.5-2 years in the sector, some of the peers have reported huge losses. We have performed much, much better in the industry. So this has created a lot of opportunity in the sector. Before I jump to the numbers, fundamentally nothing has changed. Inclusion is on the top of government agenda. Financial inclusion is on the top of RBI's agenda. And from the demand side, nothing has changed on the ground. I mean, there are various reports. In none of the reports, it is said that means we are serving at least 50% of the market. So there is a lot of unmet demand. So those who will deliver the things properly have a lot to gain over the short term, medium term, long term. So that is the background based on which we have evolved our business over a period of time, and which is getting reflected in the numbers. So this is the broad trend of our AUM performance over a 3-year period. We have grown by roughly 21%. Our disbursement has grown by 35%. So in the most challenging time, we have grown, while the overall industry has degrown. Aditi talked about the numbers. So as per the latest report, in the last 18 months, the industry degrew by 22%. We grew by roughly 4%. There is a gap of roughly 25% industry versus our number. Similarly, in the last 12 months also, we have grown by 5.6% the microfinance business, while the industry degrew by 17%. So clearly, in the controlled environment, based on our own system, processes, technology, we are growing roughly 25% faster than the industry. That is one thing that we have achieved over a long period of time. This is a very important slide, how the business has evolved, before I switch to the financial numbers, etc. We opened more than 200 branches last year. We are planning to open 400 branches this year. We have opened 162 branches in the first half of the year, and some more branches have been opened in October and plans to open 400 branches this year. While the expenses of opening these branches to giving them reaching to a critical level, etc., is hitting our P&L in the short term. But this is probably the investment into future. We are seeing a lot of opportunities, almost 50-60% of the market still not being addressed. So we have laid that foundation of increasing the number of branches, added almost 4,000 people in the last 18 months in the team. The customers are stagnant, but they will start growing as these branches will start producing more business. The AUM per branch, AUM per loan officer, and disbursement trends are slightly impacted in the recent periods because of these additions, branches, etc. But they will start kicking in, and the operational efficiency will improve as these branches will, mature in the near term. And we have shown this growth in AUM in spite of, you know, increase in number of branches, and which has reflected in some part of operational metrics. We have done that following the guardrails much more strongly than what the industry has done. The industry guardrail has come over a period of time because of our internal processes, credit underwriting parameter, risk angle. The number of customers with three lenders, more than three lenders, is just 5.35%. The industry is talking about double digit, and earlier they were talking about even higher numbers. The 4+ customers are hardly anything, is less than 1%. On the other side, only 0.1% of the customers are more than 2 lakh loans, more than 2 lakh rupees outstanding, while almost 95% of the customers have less than 1 lakh rupees outstanding. So we have implemented these guardrails much before the industry has formally adopted them, which is helping us report better portfolio quality, etc. As and when those guardrails were imposed by the industry, we have implemented it letter and spirit right from day one, which has resulted into much better portfolio quality than the industry. This is a trend of last 4.5 years. FY22, the impact of COVID was there for almost 2 years, and then it started, so to say, easing out. FY23 and 24 were relatively better years. FY24 was actually the dream year in the recent past. And then in the last 1.5 years or so, because of the over-indebtedness issue at the industry level, we were also partially impacted because of that, though our credit costs and portfolio numbers are much, much better than all our large listed peers. But whatever is there, we have made enough provision in the balance sheet at an appropriate time. Last 1.5 years or so, GNPAs are broadly in the range of some 3.5%. We have made adequate provision. End of March, the provision coverage was 90%. End of September, it is more than 100%. So 105% is the overall provisioning. So whatever flows are coming, we are making adequate provision time to time and not keeping anything under the wraps. So the book is adequately provided for. So shifting a little bit from core business to some of the other numbers on the funding side, over a period of time, we have raised money from about 137 lenders over a period of time. Some of them have consolidated, stopped lending to the sector. But I think anybody and everybody who has lent into the sector has given money to Satin at some point in time. And you can do reference check from any of the bankers, any of the lenders. They will assure you that money from Satin will come on time. Means in our history of 35 years, not even a single day of delay, forget default. There's not even a single day of delay in terms of servicing any of our debt obligation. We have seen ups and downs. We have raised money from diverse set of lenders. If you see the list on the right-hand side, among the top 10 lenders, we have a good combination of domestic lenders, foreign lenders, banks, non-banks, foreign institutions. So it's a good diversified lender base. 75% of our borrowing is from domestic lenders, 25% is from foreign lenders, or our foreign borrowings are fully hedged. We are sitting on good amount of liquidity of more than 2,000 crore, more than 700 crore sanctions in hand end of September. While some industry peers are trying to raise the required money to take care of their business, but we have enough and more money available. In terms of rating, we are rated by ICRA at A stable. Our short-term rating is A1. The next three rating, C1 COCA from SMERA, MFI, Grading MFI 1, and CPP Gold level are the top-notch rating in the respective category. And SQ2 Moody rating is also amongst the best that is available in the industry. So this is the crux of whatever I have talked in the last five, seven minutes or so. We are not here to talk about quarter on quarter. In our kind of business, there are ups and downs in some quarters because of some small challenge in some particular geography. This is how the things have evolved over a period of 4.5 years. The gross yield has improved in FY22. The interest rates were, so the margin cap was removed. We slowly calibrated risk-based pricing, in the system, and the gross yields have started improving. The cost of borrowing is also has started showing some signs of improvement in the last 1 year or so. Our marginal cost of borrowing is around 10.5 to 10.75, and the blended cost, including some of the past borrowing, etc., is a little over 11%. But rather than seeing gross yield and cost of fund, NIM is a better reflection of, how the business is evolving. The NIMs were impacted in FY22, was close to about 9.5%, improved to 11.5%. Last two full financial year, we have reported NIMs of a little over 13%. In the first half, we are close to 14%, but we feel that between 13.5% to 14% is the NIM that we are aiming for, and we should be able to make that. Operating cost, because we are a growing organization, was about 6.2% in FY22 and FY23. FY24 was a good year. It has gone down to 5.6%, moved back to 6.3%. It is slightly up, close to about 6.98%. As I explained, that we have opened a lot of branches in this financial year and in the previous financial year. They will take some time to mature and then becoming break-even and then profitable. There are some additional manpower deployed in the recent past to take care of the delinquency, etc. But as these branches will start producing more result, I think we'll be back to the previous level at the first stage of about 6.25 or so, and then work towards bringing it further down. Loan loss ratios are, so to say, going up and down in the last few years. Our credit cost was 4.6%. We have mentioned in our earlier commentary that we'll better it this year, though the number for the first half is slightly high at 4.79%, but we are working and confident that for this year, our credit cost will be surely less than last year, though the internal targets are even tight, but for the time being, we are communicating that we'll bring it less than last year. As a reference point, in last 6 years, our average credit cost is 3.3%. In some year, it was slightly high, in some year, it was slightly low, but on a long period of time, over a 6 year of year, which was very sort of a challenging time, our average credit cost was 3.3%. Which has resulted into an ROA. Again, there were some ups and downs, but again, over a period of 6 years, we have reported an average ROA of 2.1%. Last year also, this was about 2.07%. Because of slightly increase in OPEX, because of expansion, etc., and then marginally increased credit cost, the first half we have reported 1.65%, but We are working towards beating the last year number and confident, because second half of the year is roughly 55-60% of the business what we do in the first half. So second half, the business will be even higher. So we should report better numbers in the second half. ROE is again, there's a little bit of up and down. We have reported 14% and 18% in 2 years, but we have reported on an average about 9-10% ROE in the last 6 years. Broadly at less than 3x leverage over a long period of time. Cost to income ratio is stabilizing around 50%. And for the last, again, six and a half years, we are about 25% capital adequacy. So all the broad parameters, we are performing better, things are improving, doing much better than the industry. There's no ALM challenge in the industry, and then means our comfort in the ALM is stable and improving over a period of time. So this is the last slide. I mentioned some of the numbers. So average credit cost of 3.3% over a period of 6 years, which has seen COVID and all the other challenges in the recent past. 17 consecutive profitable quarters, which none of our listed peers have reported. Average ROA of 2.1% and ROE of 9.1%. Showing a consistent performance on the profitability front, a stable capital adequacy of over 25% for the last 6.5 years. Means our biggest strength, our team, the senior team is here with an average tenure of more than 10 years, which has helped us achieve all this. So this is broadly, so the message is that let's not see quarter on quarter why we can answer any of the questions on the quarterly number, but over a period of 4.5 years, we have performed much better than the industry is the message that we wanted to convey. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now I request our Chairman and Managing Director to talk to you more about our future growth strategies.
Most cumbersome part. Thank you everyone for being here, and I think, you know, well explained by Jugal, you know, how we maintain our, I think, a pole position, you know, for the last 6 years or so. We've talked about microfinance, you know, but I feel that we also do microfinance. I think, you know, I'll start with this statement, we also do microfinance, you know. For us, we also stop. Yeah. Perfect. So, I think, you know, what we've created an ecosystem which is beyond microfinance. Why we did it? I think, you know, if we probably would give our thoughts to it, I think, you know, the first crisis when it came down to demonetization, I think, you know, gave us probably an insight of... So when the first crisis hit of demonetization, it gave us an insight that we were just doing a monoline product, you know, so we wanted to diversify from there. And that's how we created two of our subsidiaries now, which were MSME lending, which was secured, collateral based, because microfinance being unsecured had the perils of what unsecured lending would probably belong onto the table. Weighted housing finance, I think, you know, probably getting a license was far more difficult than doing the business, you know, at that point of time and even today. So for us, having forayed into MSME lending, collateral based, housing finance, again collateral based, the idea was that since we have a network in the rural markets, there is a dearth of players who are actually addressing that market for MSME lending, which is the missing middle, beyond microfinance, and housing finance, which is limited to probably the major urban markets and semi-urban markets. So we thought that we can fill that gap, and we will also go beyond our monoline product of microfinance. Having done that, I think, you know, for us, we have this... I use the word Hindi ka word, you know, we have this keeda of diversifying, you know, I think we wanted to diversify more because we thought we have the ability beyond microfinance to do that. Came certain technologies. Why technology? Because for us, we were the first one to foray into our own internal software, which we built in 2016. Having done a use case on us, by doing technology, LMS and LOS system, which we still go to a lot of fintech festivals and think we still look at people hopping upon LOS and LMS system. We built that in 2016. And we've used it ever since, you know. What has happened is that we've been able to actually mature these systems of ours, whereby we have made now a flagship product of HRMS, which is HR management system, our LOS system, our LMS system. And in fact, after having done ISO 27001 in terms of our cyber, in terms of our security, we're also foraying through our technology company small and baby steps towards cyber security, because that we feel is also one of the key features which is going to be there for the technology world, you know. We were still not satisfied, but we diversified more, you know. We are just launching an AIF Category 2 fund, again, which is got it first. It's a women-led fund, women-oriented fund. It is inclusive. It is actually a fund which I probably got a word today morning, is that it believes in shift, which is, again, looking at sectors which are future-ready for India, looking at sectors which are green, looking at inclusion in a larger space, you know. So that's where our foray has been in terms of SGAL. These are all our 100% subsidiaries. When you talk about housing finance, again, when I started my opening remarks, I said, you're trying to fix up a market which is not being looked at by, I won't say, you know, any lender, but I think you'll find practically no one in that rural market space. You know? Housing, when we talk about, everybody talks about all these Category 2, Category 3 towns, you know, but nobody talks about villages. There are 600,000 villages. There are about 800 odd plus districts, you know, and we are probably there right at the grassroots level. And for us, housing finance comes from a basis where the ticket sizes are ranging between 4 to 5 lakh of rupees. Now, that is something, a market which is there. Today, when we talk about microfinance, we have about close to about 7, 8 crores of borrowers. That's our market, you know, which we are looking at housing finance, you know. And being able to cover our first milestone, we've actually done 1,000 crore plus AUM now. We just completed it in October. So for us, that's where we are heading towards in terms of our housing finance segment. MSME, again, you know, for us, microfinance gets limited to a certain space, you know, it gets probably finished off at about 100,000 or maybe 125,000. What happens beyond that, you know? Supposing a microfinance borrower who is in need of a maybe a high ticket size loan, for us, it starts from about 1,25,000 down to about maximum 5 lakhs. But the sweet spot for us is about 150,000. Collateral based. Again, people or borrowers who have actually done a cycle with us, they are eligible to do that. We have their credit behavior. We have their credit records. We have actually seen their credit profiling and everything, you know. And that's probably a ready market for us to probably foray in, you know. And this is probably a sweet spot for us again. We've covered a distance across, you know, by having an AUM of close to about 600 crores. And what we have added now more in terms of our foray again into green finances. So that's a separate vertical in our SFL company where green finance is going to be looked at. And we've actually looked at it from a viewpoint where we are looking at renewables. We are not looking at EV to be for sure, but we are looking at renewables. We are looking at energy renewables. We are looking at sustainability. We are looking at circularity. But we are also looking at, in a major way, on climate change and climate change, you know, equipment and companies from there on. This is one of our strong statements which we always make. Today, for us, in microfinance, we've been able to address all these concerns, and we've been literally ahead, you know, as what Jugal showed you in the slide, we've been ahead from our peers only because of the reason that we are very strong on technology. We are strong on technology. We've been strong on our MIS. We've been strong on customized report because it's easy for us to customize anything and actually do it rather than wait for an outside vendor to probably come and understand the business and then try and evolve on it. So we've created a technology company, which is, again, going to be focused more on our fintechs, on LOS, LMS. But today we have an HRMS, which we probably are going to do it. And as you would have it, no, it's profitable from day one. It's just been about a year. The moment we started this company, we acquired two clients, you know, and, you know, two good clients on the LOS and LMS. And I think, you know, we have a bright future for our technology company going ahead. This is as of what I told you is what we are again differentiating from there. You know, our first one, we're just launching it now. And it'll be a women-led, women-based enterprises, women-led team, you know. In fact, the team is already in place. And we are looking at it in a much more fashion where I think the ESG principles as well as, I think, you know, the inclusive as well as the future-ready businesses will probably be taken care of. This is one thing, you know, which we are now, again, piloting, you know, and we started rolling it on, you know. When I talk about Satin Sathi, we are in fact building one of the largest rural networks in India. When I say we are building a largest rural network in India, we have an outreach. We are in close to about 700 odd branches, 1 lakh villages. We cover at least about 70% of the districts in India. And if I give you an insight into what Satin Sathi will bring in, you know, we've got 22 lakh customer service points across India, 22 lakh. If we are even able to tap, out of that about 8 lakh are active CSP points. If we are even able to tap close to about 10% of that, which is about 2 lakh agents across India, we've made a huge network. Why? We've just opened up 30 branches in about 2 months. 30 branches mean we have 3 relationship managers in that. Every relationship manager has onboarded about 100 agents of ours, which means we are enrolling close to about, with 100 people, about 10,000 agents. Now, these will actually bring in and give products and services. When I talk about products, it is products beyond lending. These are products which are aspirational products like consumer durables, like various other products like, you know, as low as pressure cookers, as low as bicycles. Even if these 2,20,000 agents of ours are able to do 1 unit per month, we do about 220,000 units per month. We have up till now done close to about 5 lakhs, close to 6 lakh units in the last year, close to about 123 crores. And this is the biggest network which we are developing, you know. And once we have this in place, I think, you know, the differentiation will remain very stark when we look at this in a largest broad framework as such, you know. I've given you a download of the diversification which we've done, you know. The only thing which I can tell you is that we are not an NBFC MFI purely as what people perceive it to be. And I think when I talk to people and when I talk to, you know, I think analysts, I talk to investors, I talk to a lot of people, you know, the bracket seems to be microfinance, you know. For us, the bracket is not microfinance. As I said, we also do microfinance. But for us, our biggest future which we are looking at are these 5 subsidiaries of ours, including Satin Sathi, which is going to be in the parent company. Now, when we look at this, I think, you know, for us, the diversification is through strengthening our footprint and building up a group and an institution which goes beyond the parallels of just microfinance. This is what we want to dream for. And I think this is something, you know, which I can probably assure you across on this, standing on this podium today, that by 2030, we are looking at having an asset mix of at least 25%, which is going to be non-MFI, composite of all these subsidiaries of ours. You know, 75% will be microfinance. But I can tell you for sure that we will try to break this 25% also in 2030. That's what, you know, we look forward towards Satin as an institution. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Singh. We'll start the Q&A session now. We have three people with mics, so if you have any questions, please just raise your hand and we'll hand over the mic to you. Before that, the management will just take stage.
Arjun, I'll take over your role, basically. So, I think everybody's heard about us, patiently, and I think, please feel free to ask us questions, And I would love that people can ask us questions,
Hi. Thank you for a wonderful presentation. Very impressive, I must say. In one of the slides, and this may be a very newbie kind of question on industry, but in one of the slides I saw that you had given that number of lenders per borrower. So my question was that why does the industry or you would lend to somebody who has already taken loan from three other borrowers? What is the dynamics there? Why a customer takes loan from multiple lenders, and how does this work at the ground level?
See, let me give you an answer to this. I think if you look at the grassroots level of a rural household, every rural household technically across India has close to about 2 to 3 streams of income. They will have a small maybe land holding jahan pe wo farming karenge. They will have a cattle, maybe a couple of cattle basically from where they will have a consumption of milk, or they can sell milk, that's another stream of income. One is farming, one is, dairy farming, which is practically prevalent in every household you go across in rural India. You'll have an income from there. A third, which will be like clusters of, cottage and household industries which work. You'll find Firozabad bangle making, you'll find Agra shoe making, upper shoe lowers. You'll go down to clusters like these where they have, household industry businesses happening across. Small cottage industry businesses. That's another stream of income. Now, when the stream of income are close to about, on an average, about 30 to 40,000 rupees per month, their aspiration to take money is not just limited to about 50, 70,000 rupees, which one MFI technically takes care of. If you look at the MFI industry right now, even the average AUM outstanding is about 53,000. So when I talk about 50,000, 50,000 is a kuch nahi hota. Even if you've got a small kirana shop in the rural village, 50,000 doesn't stock up to any kind of a level. Now their aspiration is to take a little bit more than that. So 50,000 is not what they're looking for. They're looking at close to about 1.5, 2 lakhs, 3 lakh of rupees, which one institution is normally not able to satisfy, because we all limit ourselves to technically about the maximum limit is about 90,000. So they will have to borrow from a few lenders, which is about 2 to 3, so that that optimum capacity of their credit need is fulfilled through, let's say, not one but about 3 lenders. So that's probably the premise, where technically about 3 lenders jump in.
Okay, thank you. A related question to that is that over the period when you would have, I'm sure you would have done that analysis on your loan loss, have you done this in terms of this category-wise, that where the loan loss has been more, was it a single borrower, 2 borrower, or 2 lenders, or 3 lenders, or 4 lenders, is there any correlation?
So we run a lot of data matrix on this, so we try and find where do we find our portfolio quality erring, There's no standard formula which we've been able to arrive at, It's not according to geography, it's not according to the business which they do, it's not according to the number of people are there in the household. We've done every kind of a demographic check. It's random. There's no pattern which is probably been there. And that's, we've been trying desperately to find that pattern, Is there a pattern somewhere where, the loan loss provision emanate higher somewhere or through a certain category of borrowers or a certain business, you know, which will probably be there. But sadly so, there is no fixed, you know, mechanism where we're able to find a pattern to that, you know. So it's, I think, you know, it can come from anywhere technically, you know, and that's how it is, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just ask another question from my end.
Kasha, please go ahead. Yeah. You know,
so I just wanted your understanding on, if you can just take us through, how has the regulatory framework changed in, let's say, last one or one and a half decades? Because we saw demonetization, we saw lockdowns in the recent past. But this model, when from a secondary market perspective, when we as investors saw it, it came across as one of the most solid credit giving practices from a JLG perspective. But now, from that particular spectrum to now, as earlier discussed, multiple lenders to the same borrowers. So how has the lender, how has the regulator's point of view changed in this? And is it also, and we also parallelly speak about the financial inclusion. If we have to think on those lines, then something like MFI needs to be, from a TAM perspective, should be theoretically a very high number. But you also spoke about how you want to get into some of the other businesses, not just from a MFI perspective. So are these linked from the way the industry has panned out and your strategy going ahead? And the earlier part, how is the regulatory aspect changed in the last one and a half decades?
So let me answer your second question first. Why have we diversified? You know, if you look at it, what, you know, we told you, I think the universe of the borrowers remain the same. When I talked about 6 crore or 8 crore borrowers, basically the universe remains the same. You know, so what we are bringing on is, like, say, if somebody's taken a microfinance loan, I think, you know, their credit need was limited to maybe a small aspect of their business. The moment they graduate from that small limited business across and move on to a higher cycle of business, who is there to satisfy their needs? The banks have not stepped in across over there, and we already have a credit profiling of all these borrowers, you know. So this is the best segment for us, you know. Again, you know, so we actually give them a high ticket line or a loan, but based again on collateral, you know. Similarly, housing. We've seen housing across, you know, various segments coming in through urban, you know, talk about 5 crore ka loan, 1.5 crores, you know, tier 2, tier 3 towns, you know, of various housing finance companies. But there has not been a single institution which has been able to crack the rural market. You know. Now, the rural market is, again, very huge. You know, somebody wants to make 2 rooms in their, you know, in a rural household, they want to construct maybe a floor across over there, or they want to take, because the family is getting big, maybe want to take another house across over there. That's a huge segment again. But again, it's a borrower who actually resembles a microfinance borrower. Now, what better for us? They already have a credit bureau. They've already done maybe a couple of cycles with us, or maybe with someone else. That's the best segment we can probably address, and that's the reason why this diversification has happened to in these kind of products, you know, across over there. Now, talking about the regulatory, you know, framework, you know, I think, you know, it's easier to understand about, you know, at this, I was there at the Business Standard Summit yesterday. I said, it's so easy to talk about negativeness, you know, but if you look at the financial inclusion in a broader framework, I think the regulator is tuned towards making it reach. You know, people have been talking about inclusion. They've been talking about it, but I think we've been able to deliver it. And through this outreach, you know, the regulator, after having fixed up an interest rate cap or maybe a margin cap about for so many years, you know, post the Andhra crisis in 2010, opened up, you know, the harmonization code about 2.5 years back. You know, I think there was a rush after that for people to really grow. And I think that rush probably has paid off with whatever headwinds is there. But the idea behind all this regulatory framework was, again, that let's open up the sector for more people to drive financial inclusion. So the government has a very strong foothold in trying to do that. And we are actually working on that so that we are able to drive whatever we have to drive through this. You know, regulation-wise, they've just opened up, again, the qualifying asset norm. So today, for us, we were limited to 75% of qualifying assets. We were just pure microfinance. They said, okay, fine, you can do more. It's now brought down to about 60%. So we have a headroom of about 40% more to do non-qualifying, non-micronized assets. So I think, you know, if we are looking at financial inclusion or broader framework, I think the regulator, the various stakeholders are probably in for it, and that's the reason why, you know, in spite of all these crises, you know, there's been no failure. Honestly, there's been no failure. We've had, you know, huge credit costs, we've got huge write-offs, we've got all that, you know. But these are strong growth companies, these are strong companies with strong capital adequacy. If you talk about our capital adequacy, we're at about 26%. Last, I think, 6 years?
Six and a half years,
we've been above 25% capital adequacy, where the statutory norm is 15%, you know. So there's depth in this business model. There's a lot of this thing, and I think people probably should look at the more positive aspects rather than, you know, and I think human nature always is like that, you know, people love to hear about negativity, you know, rather than positivity. But I think, you know, what happens is in this whole bandwidth of negativity, people tend to lose focus on the positive things which probably there, and maybe that hits on later to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please.
Yeah, thank you, sir. This is Aditya Mundra from My Temple Capital. Thank you for the opportunity. Just couple of questions. I'll start with the first one. Sir, if you could just throw some more light on Satin Saathi, as well as the exact business model for Satin Saathi, the AIF and the tech platform. And how much regulatorily can we go for our non-MFI revenue? There must be some cap, or we can have any amount of...
No, we don't have a cap on that.
Okay, so we can have any percentage of non-MFI
Absolutely.
Revenue.
So let me tell you, Satin Saathi is the non-qualifying this thing. You know, it's a qualifying this thing because what we are trying to do is we are only targeting microfinance borrowers for our Satin Saathi outlook, you know. So for us, this extensive network, distribution network, you know, piece which we are making is only to satisfy the needs of our customers, our microfinance customers, to take on more aspirational products and services like a TV, a refrigerator, a mobile phone, a cycle, a dinner set, things like these, you know, a solar system. Besides non-financial services like, or financial services like insurance, look at maybe telemedicine to a certain extent. You know, we do have partnership with a Swedish company called Doc Online. We do their, you know, Doc Online, and this came through COVID. So let me give an answer to that. You know, so today we have close to about 10,000 customers every month, where today my rural women borrower has access to at least about 20-25 panel doctors on telephone for a payment of about 300 rupees per year to make innumerable phone calls, get prescription medicine written out by that doctor, and all fields, you know, talk of neuro, talk of ortho, you talk of gynae, you talk of, you know, psychology, it's everything which is there. This is the network which we are building across over there. Now, at a mere 300 rupees, you can make at least about 3,000 calls in a year to get, you know, your prescription medicines from a very well-known doctor from there. You know, so this is the network which you're trying to, you know, to make in. You know.
So it's on a platform.
It'll be a platform, yes.
It'll be a platform.
It'll be a digitized platform, basically. It'll be all digitized completely. We won't move through any kind of a manual interventions or anything. It'll be completely a digitized.
But platform. Then you will have the requirement of they having smartphones, and which...
So let me answer this also to you, you know, for the consumption of everybody, you know. We did a survey of our borrowers. You won't believe it. About 70% of them, the women borrowers, had smartphones.
Okay.
The balance 30% which did not possess a smartphone of their own had somebody else in the family own a smartphone, you know. So that is not a mitigation, you know, which probably is there. You know.
Have we started anything there?
Yes, yes. Satin Saathi, we've already enrolled close to about maybe 1,000 odd, you know, agents of ours. The business, the transactions have started, you know, actually. You know.
So any AUM which is developed there, I mean, That's how we calculate.
Now, our AUM, which we are not doing through the agents, is already 125 crore, but now we are shifting it to the agents.
Okay.
So we've done that. But it's just, you know, we've opened up 30 branches, you know, right now, and we've enrolled about 1,000 this thing, you know, and maybe by the year end, you know, we probably have these 3,000, 4,000, you know, agents, you know, working full time on this, you know.
And any light on AIF and tech platform?
AIF, I think, you know, Aditi is probably the person who's leading this, you know, can probably throw you more light on that, you know.
Yeah, Aditya. So this AIF is actually going to focus more on the MSMEs, more on the beyond the crowded market. So it is again semi-urban, small towns, MSMEs, they are vendors, and the ticket size is around 4 to 6 odd crores. It is more like a performing credit which we will be doing over there, which will also have an element of equity, and we'll also do some acceleration, startup acceleration and mentorship over there. So that's what the theme is, and theme is again MSMEs, the theme is green, so it's like, again, somebody who's working in energy efficiency, they are doing maybe 50 crore of sales, they need to scale up, but still a plain vanilla term loan is not for them, so we can give them tailored, customized financial solutions and a hand-holding, is broadly what we are doing. So we are doing slightly difficult work. Also, we are developing a tech tool which does most of the, I will say, due diligence, most of the analysis and the monitoring post-investment. So the GRC is also, we are doing through technology over there.
So AIF, our model, our revenue will be the management
fees? The management fees, yes, broadly that and whatever carry we get.
Any then, AUM in that? What is the AUM right
so,
now?
So the first scheme, the licensing is underway. So the first fund is 500 crores and scheme one will be 100 odd crores, 12 million.
And the tech platform also, any monetization has happened to?
No, so it's our own in-house tech which we are developing only to look at the fund for now. Then we will also encourage our investee companies to implement that. Okay. And then we will see how the traction goes.
Okay. And any plans of demerging these non-MFI?
So let me give you an answer. You know, see, the idea is that at some point of time, when it is right, we will monetize these assets of ours. You know, and that is, frankly, you know, we would do at
it's
some
on
point.
The cards.
It will be there. Yeah.
And just last question: any guidance on the ROA, ROE on the MFI business?
What took you so long?
No, I think, you know, we've given one which will probably have this thing. We've said that, you know, our credit cost, what was there for last year, we'll beat that. And I think, you know, that's probably a very positive indicator to look at it because, you know, the industry is still not talking about it. But we've said that, you know, our credit cost for last year was about 4.6%, again, one of the lowest in the industry. We'll beat that for sure.
Anything on the ROA?
That will lead to the ROA, basically.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
So just to add to your questions on the revenue for the subsidy, etc. So there is no limitation. Whatever investments we are doing into subsidies, part of our non-qualifying book at the MFI level. But the equity that we are giving it to them, they can leverage that and whatever they want to earn out of that, whether that revenue is less than satin, more than satin, there is no limitation there on that.
Yeah. Hello, sir. This is Sagar from Spark Capital. My first question was that after the implementation of the guardrails 2 actually, and almost several, and before that guardrails 1 and RBI had several observations regarding the business, and that's why they took the diversification path. So in the last 6 months, have you found out some meaningful actually changes in the business? Is it helpful, these guardrails, to choose the best quality of customers? Is it helpful for you to at least, you can say, to choose the right credit actually as compared to before?
So let me put this in perspective for you. We are the only institution which brought our own internal guardrails 2 years before the actual guardrails by MFIN and everybody came in. You know. The reason for this is that the output numbers, our credit cost was probably the least in the entire industry because of our own internal guardrails, which were kind of what has been brought in by MFIN and the other SROs. Now, having said that, if you look at our data, the guardrails which have been put from April And before that also, I think, you know, I don't have a number, but we had about close to about 4 to 5%, which was 3+ lenders. You know, the industry was talking of close to about 20% or so, you know. So just because we had our own internal guardrails put in together, and post April, you know, it's zero. It's completely zero. We don't have not even a single this thing, you know. The only thing which it has given us post April is that our rejection rates have gone up. It's closer to about 64% now, rather than what it was.
And last year, what it was?
It was about 60%, 61%, you know.
Okay. So this has helped at least to choose you better quality of
slightly
customers.
Slightly more better. But we already had this implemented through us, you know.
Okay. My second question was, you have given the FY30 guidance, actually, that your non-MFI assets would be around 25%, majorly would be housing and MSME. So already the RBI has given you the bandwidth of going for 40% for in NBFC MFIs. So why are you not stretching it till 40% and staying still 25%? And why to not introduce a new product such as a gold loan, and instead of going for this AIF and this Satin Tech and all these diversifications, why not to introduce one more product?
But why?
This will give you better stability in your loan.
I think we are far more better stable through our other activities. You know, this is what we feel. See, we are not cut out to do gold loans. There are a lot of players who are doing gold loans, you know, across over there. You know, what we are again, you know, banking upon through our subsidiaries is one, the large outreach which we have. You know, I think, you know, we are banking upon that, and there is practically dearth of people. Gold loan, abhi you'll get, you know, you'll have the Manappurams and the Muthoots and, you know, the small finance bank talking about gold loan, and including the banks. You know, you don't get the rates one. Because the banks are there, you know, heavily invested into also into this, you know. We feel that we still have a lot of room left to do and look at, you know, MSME, the missing middle, which is from there, you know. AIF definitely gives us the flexibility to do what we really intend to in terms of green, climate, you know, women-led enterprises, MSME inclusion to a larger extent. And having said that, you know, for us to introduce green finance as a vertical, I think green is the future. Today, you know, if we talk about it, I think we are investing ourselves into the future which is there, you know. And that's the reason why we're building up this vertical of green finance into SFL, which was just doing pure MSME lending. And we've got, you know, I think, you know, huge, you know, features on that. And I think I can probably take a minute, you know, if you have time, I will ask Pramod, who is our CEO for green finance. He's done 3 years of, you know, a lot of research on green finance. And I think you'll probably spend a minute and, you know, tell what green finance is all about. You know? Sorry.
I don't understand what's green finance. I think there's a lot of vagueness, ambiguity out there. People generally tend to relate EVs only as green finance. Possibly it's a buzzword. I've spent 5 years. I've burned a lot of money also out there. So I've learned it the hard way. But there are many verticals out there under sustainability. I think solar or clean energy has been there, active for quite some time. Biofuels, renewables, circularity, energy efficiency. So these are spaces that are new. And when you say about gold loan, that's been there for ages. So there's no novelty element that you're suggesting. As in, it's a great business, secured. It's a great business, collateral, solid returns. But is there a novelty element out there? The answer to that is no. So which is where we have identified green as a space where we believe we'll start early. And by 2030, when the market is mature, we'll be possibly one of the leading lenders out there. So that's the idea out there. Any specific questions, then possibly I can answer.
Okay,
that.
So in this green finance, this will be within the MFI, or this is the fourth portfolio that...
What was mentioned, that's under SFL.
Under SFL.
We have already been doing MSME lending in the Satin Fin service. So it's an extension of sustainability out there.
Okay, so those businesses which are involved in these kind of...
There'll be ancillaries, there'll be adjacencies also out there, which we'll cover as we move on. See, it's not something that we want to do in the very first year. We'll do it in a modular manner. We'll build verticals one by one.
Okay, sure. My third question, sir, was regarding
Sorry,
to the...
Yes.
So one technicality I would like to bring. Sure. You said RBI non-qualified norms. Now technically, even if 100% of my portfolio is MFI, I can have 75% qualified, because non-qualified is cash, equity and everything else. And the investment in subsidiaries also. So we have invested almost 560 odd crores in the subsidiaries also. That is also non-qualifying. So technically, you are saying that 75 aap kar rahe hain. That is portfolio. Within that, MFI and non-MFI is what we have shared. So you may not confuse the two, bringing that up.
You haven't incorporated the subsidiaries.
In the only the portfolio managed, because RBI formula is everything. It's a balance sheet formula. We are giving the portfolio breakup.
Sure. My third question was regarding to the AIF only.
Okay.
The AIF ticket size, as you mentioned, is around between 4 to 6 crores. And that is quite different as compared to your own organic MSME portfolio. So your clients would be naturally in tier 1 or metro cities, right? Rather than semi-urban.
Not
because
really.
Because those turnovers, at least 50 to 100 crores.
Yeah. So there are people doing 50 crore turnover in places like Hapur also. Just that we don't see
it.
So we are going to those smaller towns beyond the metros.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I'm here.
Oh, sorry.
Hi. Good evening, Dr. Singh, and thank you to you and the entire management team. It's a very good format to have your entire leadership team here. I want to go back to your statement, we also do microfinance. So I want to understand, within the 75%, I know by 2030 you want to have 25% or more of revenues or AUM coming out of non-microfinance. But within microfinance, do you see there are untapped opportunities? The reason I ask is you have a 35-year history, you are currently top three, you've been successful at this. And, you know, you have built a moat in it. Yes, there are lots of microfinance companies, but you are amongst the leading companies. So I just want to understand, do you feel, while you did mention you are sort of pan-India, 550 districts, almost all states, but India is a very large country. So are there opportunities there? You know, given access to technology, your network, your reach within the core microfinance business that you could also pursue over the next 5 years. Just some thoughts on that.
Yeah, so, you know, when I said this, you know, we are probably the only ones who made a statement that we are owning 400 branches this year. You know, I think we're the only MFI which said that, you know. So we're looking at growth perspective there also. Satin Sathi is an offshoot of this, you know, because we have a distribution network which is done by our loan officer at this thing, but we've never tapped an external market of CSP agents, which is, I said, you know, is about close to about 22 lakhs, you know. If we are able to empower that and bring into that fold various other products and services which are related to microfinance, I think we will have something which probably nobody can ever, you know, imagine to do it in microfinance. So that is what we are trying to work upon, you know.
Got it. My second question was around the regulatory approach. You know, you interact closely with regulators. Now, this industry has had various cycles. You know, some have been state-specific, but there have been various cycles around it. So how do you think the regulators currently viewing this? And I know it's not always within control because there might be state-specific situations. But just some color on this, how important is this sector for the regulator, and how do you see the regulators supporting this, given the importance of the sector?
See, I'll tell you, you know, as I said before, you know, I think, you know, financial inclusion is a space which is loved by everyone, you know, to be very honest. The politicians love it, the bureaucrats love it, the administration loves it, the RBI loves it, you know, because we come under their fold, you know. But I think, you know, what is important to understand is that for them, they are making regular changes to enhance our complete functioning and the environment which we work upon. The reason why they brought down our non-qualifying asset norm basically because we were getting hurt by that. The reason why they deregulated the interest rate because it was difficult to actually drive financial inclusion on a larger scale because of these interest rate caps and everything, you know. I think, you know, they are looking at it from a very positive standpoint of view. And more than that, I think, you know, for us, what we get in also from a lot of state administrations, a lot of help across in terms of how we are able to widen the region. We do a lot of, you know, center leader workshops. We do a lot of health camps. We do a lot of other activities which actually bring a lot of these women back into the mainstream fold, you know, to probably work upon that. And that is probably something, you know, which is looked at by, you know, various states, you know. I'll just give you one small example of the state, Assam. Assam went through a mode where I think the government, state government stepped in and this thing. They realized it pretty fast that, you know, it's very difficult without to survive without microfinance, you know. And the moment they could understand that, they were able to bring back the AMFRSI bill, you know, and, you know, things are back. You won't believe it, you know, post that, and I think we were the only institution which took that call. Today, our portfolio over there is the best. You know, we have a power of 0.02%, you know. That's how things work out in terms of inclusion, you know.
Thank you very much, and thanks. All the best to the entire team.
And just to add, you know, RBI has supported the sector whenever there is a state-level issues. They have come very clearly writing to the chief ministers and the state secretariat, etc., taking a very clear stand that the RBI-regulated entity should not be part of the local regulations wherever it is. They are sending that message very, very clearly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Hi, this is Gagan Baya. I have a few questions. I'll just quickly go through that. One, maybe initially, will maybe address to Jugal. What are our collection efficiencies, and how has it gone, like from a stability to gone down, and how has it recovered in last 3 years?
So as I shown that you know, post COVID, etc., PAR 1, etc., have gone up to double digit and all, and then over a period of time have come down. FY23 was slightly better. FY24 was a dream year. And then the portfolio quality was broadly fine till June 24, which is the first quarter of FY25. And the industry has gone through a very, very difficult time. A lot of peers have reported losses, etc. And we were also not insulated, so our PAR 1 and PAR 90 numbers have started going up. But they are coming back on track. So as on today, our PAR 1 is about 5.8%, PAR 30 is about 4.9%, PAR 60 is about 4.2%, and 90 is about 3.5%. So it has gone up from 2020 to 22. It was going up, and then, you know, was better year during FY23 and 24, and then now again stabilizing and improving.
Mm-hmm. How much of our disbursement and collection is in digital form, or how much is in cash?
So disbursement for last many years is 100% cashless. Money is going directly into the borrower's bank account. Cashless collection, we are not pushing it hard, but about 16-17% of the collection is where nobody is touching cash. Right? While some of the borrowers go to the BC points, deposit money, but borrower is paying cash, so we don't see it as a true cashless. About 16-17% of the money, then the money is flowing from borrower's account to our account.
So disbursements is 100% through the bank accounts, but 15-16% is where there is no cash involved, you know, where the borrower actually makes a digital payment. The balance, I think 13-14%. So in total, if you look at it, it's about 25-27%. Is, you know, the balance 13-14% handled by agents, you know, who pick up cash basically. So we don't handle cash in that, you know. So if you look at pure digital, it's 15%, 16%. But if you actually talk about the largest framework of digital, then it's close to about 27%.
Okay. Also, in last 15 years, the MFI industry has seen four major instances. One was Andhra government coming out with some harsh regulatory steps. Two, demon, three, COVID, and four was this episode of over-leverage in the sector. And every time the entire industry has gone through, you know, it goes up, then again goes down, then again goes up, goes down. So, you know, from a risk point of view, you know, how are we planning as a company to bring in mitigants or resilience so that, you know, taking the learnings from these four episodes so that we can have a more resilient portfolio going forward. You know, I mean, you can't guess what changes government is going to bring. I mean, you just have to go through it, you know.
Yeah.
Something like demon, you can't guess right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, more from taking the learnings from these four episodes, how are we planning to make our portfolios more resilient?
Yeah, so that's exactly what we've been able to do. So one, diversification, definitely that's a broader way of, you know, looking at and mitigating that, you know. The other is we are constantly evolving ourselves through, you know, looking at the mechanism of JLG, Are we able to do anything on that? You know, and we are doing our baby steps in that. You know, just to give you an example, you know, like earlier the JLG group used to be close to about 20, 25 women. You know, we brought it down now to about 10 or 11. You know, because it's now more easier to do a connect. Earlier we used to start with a first group of at least about 8 to 10 women. You know, we brought that down now to 3 or 4. So a group gets formulated and formalized with just 3 or 4 women, you know. So that's one key takeaway we've taken from that, you know. We brought in our internal guardrails, you know. We work on these MIAs practically day in and day out, you know. We've got mechanisms of looking at center efficiencies. We are looking at state-specific this thing. We also look at in terms of PIN codes, of how every PIN code performs in terms of their threaded behavior. We've got our internal scorecards. We've got our internal scorecards based on whatever, you know, we find in a household across the world. Uske ghar mein TV hai, nahi hai, kaccha ghar hai, pakka ghar hai, what business are they trying to do? You know, and this is an evolving feature we come up with. Whatever we've done, you know, and that's the reason why when we say this, you know, I think, you know, it's very difficult for people to realize that it's a constant day-to-day work which is happening, you know, it's work in process. There's no one magic formula which will come in, you know, but what we are trying to do is we are cutting short our periods of distress, you know, which will there, you know. So if the industry goes down by, let's say, 10%, we are short because of all these factors put in together, you know, maybe technology, our internal guardrails, our scoring systems, our various other formats, you know. If it is 10% for the industry, we'll be, let's say, 2.5-3%, you know. So that is what we are, you know, we are building on into our entire ecosystem across over there. And that's how we probably do it. Broader concept, diversification.
Are we also looking at move towards individualization? Do we already have some portfolio?
Yes, we are building that also basically. So I just gave you an example of smaller JLGs, but we are also in a couple of states where we feel that there is room only to do individual lending. You know, we are moving away there. We are doing pilots on that. Once we see that the pilot is successful, definitely we'll move away in those certain specific states into individual lending also.
Because you would have data for the existing borrowers, which, you know, you can see the credit history and performance and basis that.
But see, everything happens on the ground. You know, unless and until we are able to look at the complete practical solution of delivering and the collection mechanism, I think we will not be able to answer it just by pure this thing. You know, so we are working on, and I think the thing is ready. We'll be disbursing in a couple of states, basically only on the individual lending model.
Last question. What's our, you know, long-term plan or medium to long-term, let's say 3 years and 5 years on a AUM basis, you know, where do we see ourselves, our business?
We are looking at a growth of close to about 10 to 15%, 15% year on year. That's what, you know, this is not a guidance, but this is the broad framework we are trying to look at, about 15 odd percent.
Look at
25,000 is what we are looking at the AUM by 2030, but that's what our internal this thing is. We will beat that, you know, that's for sure.
25,000 by 2030 on the AUM.
Okay.
And on the gearing ratio?
Gearing, we are at about 2.75 even now.
What do we aim to be at by 2030?
So you know, there are two things. One is that the microfinance business probably will grow broadly at 15% plus minus something. The subsidies on a small base will grow much faster. Housing with just cost 1,000 crore. SME is close to about a little over 600 crore. Green is a new initiative and help us achieve those numbers. As far as gearing is concerned, we have an internal target on capital adequacy. Oh. We do not want to go below 20% at any point in time, and within that, 18% tier 1 is the broad framework with which we have been working for the last 6-7 years and always maintained that. Gearing means at some point in time we may touch closer to 4, but on the capital adequacy side we want to remain at least 20% capital adequacy.
Thank you and all the best.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
The lady in back had a question. I saw her raising hand sometime. You still have your question or they are answered?
No,
I'm asking
on
okay.
I'm glad.
Sir, this is CA Vishal Chawla, myself. So it was a very good presentation, and it looks very balanced management team. It is a very clear presentation also. So my question is like, which are your closest competitor?
In terms of microfinance?
Yeah.
We are our own competitors, I'll be very honest.
You have a pipeline, your next projection for next 5 years. Shall be more players will be coming. Now, for gold loans, obviously, you are not going into the gold loan because there are a lot of other big players also. So, you can't go at this point of time. But there will be more players. There are other listed companies also today which will be eyeing the microfinance business.
So, Vallabh, I don't know how many would like to come in. But honestly, for us, you know, I'll be very honest. You know, we are growing. We don't want to grow by leaps and bounds, basically, because for us, portfolio asset quality is sacrosanct. You know, we want to just concentrate on that. And as I said, you know, for us, you know, microfinance is about 10 to 15%, you know, growth year on year. We are concentrating also on the our other subsidiary, basically. I think, you know, we feel there is a lot of, you know, meat left in that, you know, to probably look at that, and we will develop that, you know. So I don't think so. We've got competition, you know. We are very diversified now. You know, I think, you know, if you look at, I think, you know, it's for people to actually look at that landscape completely. You know, our landscape is completely different. You know, that's the reason why I made the statement before the start of my, you know, my talk basically was that, you know, we also do microfinance because this we've been doing. It's like been ages for us. You know.
Okay, sir. Any dividend policy you are thinking?
Was NBFC bada mushkil hota dividend dena because we are all constantly expanding, you know, over leveraging yourself and everything, you know. But we'll see if we feel that, you know, our tech company, our AIF, you know, everybody is giving us a lot of meat to probably do it. I think, you know, we might surprise you all with, you know, some dividend at some point of time.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Any further questions? Great. I think we've answered everybody's questions. So first of all, let me thank the management for a great presentation and answering all the questions patiently. And thank you everybody.
Thank you everyone, you know, for being here with us, you know.
Absolutely. The Experience Center will still be open. So if any of you guys have missed it, please feel free to join us there.
Yeah.
And also for high tea. Thank you everybody.
Thank you so much, you know. Thank you.